I have an old version of my slides because it wouldn't upload this morning. So it's going to be a little more conversation than usual, but promise I will upload these or be happy to send the correct version to anybody interested later. So bear with me a little bit, but I'll get through it. Thanks. So what I'm going to talk to you now, you've heard some great examples of specific programs dealing with social determinants of health. Marjorie told a little more about law and policy and how it applied in an area of tobacco, which has been such a great model, and how we've tried to apply it to other areas of health. What I'm going to do is step back just a little bit and talk through, in general, how are law and policy useful in doing these important things in policy change, and especially dealing with social determinants of health. I have no relationships to disclose also. So what I'll talk through today is four different things. First, I'm going to give you just a little background on public health law in general and what we at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation have been doing. I'll then tell you some tools and resources that are available to communities trying to make changes, especially policy and environmental change. I'll describe some social justice and policy issues that are related to the county health rankings and the commission. And finally, I'll give you a few examples of legal interventions that can affect health behaviors, the physical environment, and other social determinants of health. And I went the wrong way. Right. So first, just a little background on public health law. Public health laws are those that preserve, protect, and promote individual and community health. At the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, when we're talking about law, and I think you've heard it from these examples, we're really thinking broadly. We're thinking statutes, we're thinking regulations, case laws, and even policies with the weight of law, those that really make a difference in the community. We think the effective application of law is essential. Just passing law is not enough. You've then got to make sure that it's put into place. I know everyone hears about the evils of unfunded mandates, but that has an important implication on what you can do with a policy and a law. And one reason why we think laws are so important, and you've seen great examples today, are really that they change behaviors, environments, and social norms. If you think through tobacco, 15 years ago, any restaurant, hotel, you would have walked in, there'd be people smoking, there'd probably ashtrays around. That would be crazy now, and I know, it's just over that amount of time, it's just really changed, and it's impressive how quickly things can make a difference. And finally, on our public health team, we really think that public health law really strengthens agencies' ability, their authority at times, but also it increases the flexibility to allow them to meet their community needs. So I'm going to talk just a little bit. At the Robert Wood Johnson, we've worked in the past in areas of public health law. We've done learning collaboratives with people. We worked on Turning Point. We did surveys of people to figure out what they needed in the field. We've worked in the areas of legal analysis and policy research. We have some great programs here that work in the area of public health law. Tobacco Control Legal Consortium really helps to provide communities real day-to-day technical assistance and experience if they're trying to make changes in the tobacco policy change. The National Policy and Legal Analysis Network works in the area of childhood obesity prevention. And now we've tried to think through how we can build kind of a broader public health law effort. So at Robert Wood Johnson, we undertook the ability to really build the field. We've put it into four different, I'm not sure the shape, kind of rectangles or shapes. But the four parts include building the evidence. And so we funded a public health law research program at Temple in 2009. We want to make sure to support the application of law and have a network for public health law. We have recently just changed the name last week, so you may see that instead, which has a national coordinating center and five regional centers to help those out in the field, the health officials, council, advocates, to really think through how they can use law and policy proactively and what they're doing. And now we're moving on to figure out how to strengthen partners, working with public health associations. There's a new public health law practice collaborative that is going to be made up of the Association of State and Territorial Officials, the American Public Health Officials, the National Association of County and City Health, City and County Health Officials, and the National Association of Local Boards of Health, that is just getting underway, that we think will be an exciting way to find out what's happening in the field and also make sure public health law and policy information gets to health officials. So you'll see that coming up very soon. And then finally, it's important to bring new people to the field. So we're going to help to figure out how to allow people experiences to work in public health law, how to have schools start doing a little more training in the area of law, et cetera. So this is kind of our broad public health law initiative. Some resources that are out there that I told you a little bit about are our Public Health Law Research Program, which is based at Temple. Scott Burris is the director. Their goal is really to build the public health law evidence base. You know, it's one thing to, you know, look at law, but it's important really to find out what works. I think a lot of times laws are passed, they sit on the books. There are a couple stories about it, but we don't evaluate it like we do other public health interventions. So this is really to make sure that we're using strong methodologies and also evaluating what's happening with law and policy and then getting the results out to folks through really good translation and dissemination, which is crucial. And so it's also to support that we really make sure that the information about this gets to policymakers and decision makers so that they can use the best information out there in decisions. And the website's here, and I'd encourage you to go and check out their evidence briefs. They have some great online materials showing what is public health law research and how you can use it. So a good resource for our communities. And secondly, we have a public health law network, which is based at William Mitchell School of Law. It serves, hopefully, as a seamless foundation to connect experts and users of public health law. They deliver legal technical assistance, so anything from a memo to actually picking up the phone and talking through with those out in the field, doing public health work day to day, kind of those high-level issues of what is going on other places. If we have an issue in environmental health, how can we think it through? So they're really to be assistance to folks. Also very important that they help with training and educational resources in the area of public health law. And the idea for all this, are there great things going on in the field already? It's to really think through how to connect it, how to make sure that there's coordination back and forth, and to allow those people in the field to have kind of the support of a network of others out there working in it. And they also have a website, Public Health Law Network, but the new one is networkforpublichealthlaw.org. So the new slides will have that for you. So here's a list of the first topics that the network is dealing with. You can see there's a wide range. Many of them, I think, deal with areas that we've talked about through the commission as well as through the county health rankings work. Food safety, there's tobacco reform. There's really that general health statutes and regulatory. A lot of groups, I think, don't really know the authority they have and kind of the power that they may be able to use in the area of law and policy. So these are the starting areas. Injury prevention is a good one also, where you'll see a lot of relevance with the projects we've talked about. But there are other things that deal with the county health rankings and kind of that broader social determinant that you don't see on here. And they're trying to think through now good links and connections to really help people get into some of these other areas that are so important also. Okay. So what Bridget had told you that we talked a little bit more about is specifically how law and policy can be useful with the county health rankings and also the commission. This is a slide looking at the county health rankings, and on the, my left, you'll see a list of the policies and some legal interventions that really are tied into those. So if you wanted to make a change in the area of reducing alcohol use, you might want to think legally about whether you could reduce alcohol outlet density or whether, you know, it's important to make sure that a minimum age on drinking is held. I think there are a lot of groups debating whether 21 is really the right age. So there are things like that that have legal implications that you might want to sit and think through. Other things like social determinants of health, you can see here talking about minimum wage. Is that really what's needed in your community? I know some communities are thinking through things like a living wage, which is a different amount. There are probably legal implications of that, whether you pass a requirement, you think through how to implement it, et cetera. So these are examples of kind of for each one, there's kind of a legal component that you could think through. So one thing I was going to tell you about, and I don't have a slide, but I'll talk it through, is really when you're using law and policy, there's some questions that I think a community really wants to ask itself. I think Marjorie's example was a really good one of where communities sat down and thought through, what do we want to do if we're looking at tobacco policy change, and how do we apply it to other areas? These include really defining what problem are you trying to address. You can't do everything. Which one are you really going to limit it to? What scope do you hope to have? If you have a lot of strategies you're considering, like we might hear in the county health rankings or the roadmaps, which ones are you going to prioritize? And things you may use in law and policy would be thinking through what options are available to you. You want to have a broad coalition of lawyers, of public health folks, to sit down and think with you what are the right ones. But you want to think, do they have the right impact? Do we know if they work? Is there an evidence basis on already? Has the community guide looked at it? Is it a promising practice we've heard from CDC or others? I think you always have to weigh an urgency. Childhood obesity is something that we see as an epidemic right now. It's really increasing rapidly. We don't always have the evidence that we need to have to know which policy change to implement quickly, but we probably need to try something. So do it on the best based evidence we have, and then really make sure to monitor it and evaluate it to make sure that we find out if it is working. And if it is, we want to get that out as broadly as possible. If it's not, we want to have the flexibility Marjorie talked about to really think through how to change it or how to make a new option. Other questions that we would go through, sorry, I shouldn't have advanced, would really, what other coalitions are needed? How would you enforce this law and policy once you've implemented it? And other things to consider would be really, with a lot of our legal and policy interventions, you have to always balance the individual rights versus kind of societal benefit. People talk a lot about the nanny state with obesity. Are we kind of telling people what to do? Sometimes we do, and sometimes we have a reason for doing it. But we really want to make sure we've thought through kind of all those issues. Preemption is something else that we'd want to consider. Is there a reason that we need, you know, the kind of higher level, so federal over state or state over local, to make a policy that is kind of something everyone has to do? Occasionally, maybe in the area of, you know, airline safety, you probably do need a federal law to make sure that as you fly over a different state, you don't have changes in what you have to do. But in something like a local policy change, you know, we always hear of states and localities as being the incubators for change. We probably want to promote that. So preemptive laws are probably something we don't want to consider. There are always unintended consequences also that I think you have to think through with law and policy changes. A lot of times we're thinking it through from, say, a health lens or an education lens of what's best for moving, say, an education agenda forward. But we need to think kind of big picture, what are the implications? And I think what Brenda talked about, the health impact assessments, are something that can help us think through environmental and other changes, kind of that big picture of what happens with a policy. That's what we don't need. So with the commission, one thing I wanted to also tell you about is just, you know, it's important to have a social justice perspective with law. I think right now there's a lot going on that are making people have that. Whether it's in general, kind of a lot of great things happening in the area of things like the Commission on Social Determinants of Health, whether it's Occupy Wall Street and things like that are happening. I think people are getting that combination of social justice and health, and I think law and policy are important to that also. As the Commission, as Brenda was saying, we have a broad definition of public health, and we see that the laws that affect health are found in a lot of different sectors and fields. You certainly can't affect health if you're not also looking at education laws, transportation laws. You know, your planners are becoming some of the closest friends of public health people, I think, right now. So it's important to really keep that big picture. But I think, you know, to reach a lot of the vulnerable populations that we want to, we also really have to use a social determinant framework. And so law and policy are useful for that. As Brenda was telling us, a lot of the commission recommendations have important legal applications. One of them was to have a smoke-free nation. You know, we've heard through smoke-free laws, you know, ages for purchase, all those are important legal issues that you'd want to consider. Housing is another area where there are, you know, legal issues you would consider. Would you zone for multi-density housing? Would you have, you know, bus stops that are nearby, and so you need to think through that kind of planning. So a lot of things to kind of consider with that. Went through the county health rankings. So health behaviors are another thing that law does have an ability to impact. A consideration that you may use if you're trying to impact a health behavior would be something like a pricing strategy. It's possible then to really use law to affect individuals' health behaviors, which could be related to food, to alcohol, or tobacco. Something we hear a lot now are double value programs that people are using for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. There are groups that are deciding that if you go to a farmer's market and want to buy healthy fruits and vegetables, you can get twice the value for that. And the state's willing to provide, you know, extra funding because they think it's an important need. On the other side, you can use kind of a negative incentive for behavior. A tobacco tax would be a good example of, you know, an increase in cost of a tobacco product has really helped to discourage uptake as well as fund. We can use those fundings, the money that we raise, on things like cessation. So it's a program that has a legal application but can really help us with a direct health impact. Another example would be something like joint use agreements, which make it easier to exercise and provide extra space for recreation where schools can open it up, and you'd want to think through liability and other legal issues. A final example I'll give you, which is on the Public Health Law Research Program, and you can read more about it there, I'm happy to give it to you, would be be innovative when you're trying to think through these things. Work with different partners. Think through what are new models. Philadelphia right now has a lead court that they started a few years ago. It's the only one that we've heard of in the country. And it's actually the health department was trying to figure out what to do with lead poisoning in housing. There were laws that said landlords had to abate lead poisoning, but it wasn't really happening like they hoped. So they actually sat down and worked with the court and the health department, and they found, like, by having this group, they bring landlords in. Maybe it's the threat of a judge in a court, but they're getting much faster abatement results. They're finding that their partnerships, and they're finding that landlords are actually doing what they're supposed to, so the law is actually being implemented and enforced as it should. So a new model, but one that I think really fits in with some of the broader concepts we have of social determinants of health, but an important, interesting new legal model. With that, I will stop, and I know we have time for some questions. My email address, I don't think it's here, but it's angiemcgowan@rwjf.org. Happy to mail you our new version of the slides, and I'll certainly make sure it's uploaded to APHA. So thanks for that.